First Kings chapter 3. First Kings chapter 3. We're going to get there in a minute. And I am watching the clock because their starts at 10:30, but I already told David I'm probably going to be a little bit late, so don't freak out.
After the service, can you set it up so
as you turn to 1 Kings 3, one of the things in my life, I get back to when I was in elementary school or high school and college, I am not a good test taker. Not at all.
To see if there's any questions in your
dad. And so I probably felt that test, but a lot of you feel like you're not getting up in front of people. So when I was in high school and I was told, you got to take the SATs, what was my first reaction? Dreadful. What do you mean? I got to come in on Saturday, pay all this money, and take a test that takes like 4 hours and read stuff. I don't like to read. I don't like filling in circles with my number two pencil. So I took my SATs and, let's just say my credit score right now is better than my SAT score. And I have good credit. We'll just leave it for that, okay? And so I met Sarah, and we're on one of our dates, I don't know, and getting to know each other, and I didn't know her from anybody, she didn't know me, so we're kind of starting at ground zero. And at some point, we were talking about high school, and she said I was not the valedictorian, but I was the salutatorian. And I was thinking, oh boy. And at some point, she shared her SAT score, which I did not talk about my SAT, because I don't even remember what hers is, I don't know. So that was years ago, and so now we have 4 children. And so Leah took her SATs, Caleb took his SATs, and Andrew just took his SATs. Alright? I'm still at the bottom, okay? And that's all right. If you want to know what their scores are, you can go tell. You can go ask them. I'm not going to tell you what their scores are. But I could ask them, what is my natural response in our house when we talk about SAT scores?
You have more degrees.
I'm the only one in our house that has their master's. Okay? So until someone else has their master's, that's still my only thing. But we all have weaknesses, don't we? We all have weaknesses. And in our culture, we tend to avoid our weaknesses. We don't like to talk about them. We'd rather talk about our strengths. In fact, we probably go to the other side. And so we started a series about talking about how can we have a bold faith. The only way we can have a bold faith is if God breaks us of ourselves. That's part of the process. So this little piece of, in the middle of Hebrews chapter 11, Caleb, if you bring it up, this little phrase in the middle of this, I'll just read the other part, quench the power of fire, escape the edge of the sword, here's the phrase, we're made strong out of weakness. The only way we will ever have a strong, bold, courageous faith is when we're willing to be honest about weakness. So last week, Caleb did a great job talking about Jonah, the prophet that God raised up to go preach the gospel to a bunch of wicked people, and Jonah didn't want them to be saved. You talk about a weakness. The preacher didn't want the people to get saved. He was mad at God. If you missed the message, go on our website, you can listen, it's on there, I encourage you to do that. And so we see the Bible is full of men and women who have weaknesses, and God is powerful enough to take our weaknesses and our mess-ups and our foolishness and our dumb mistakes and all of those things that we feel, God has the ability, when we surrender them to Him, He can take them and do something for eternity with them. That's the power of God. That's what God is in the business of doing. But what we have to do is to be willing to be humble, to get out of the way, to say, God, you know more than I do. We have to be willing to be weak. We have to be willing to be broken. We have to be willing to be honest about who we truly are. And so we're going to look at someone this morning. We're going to look at Solomon. And Solomon was made strong out of weakness. And he's kind of a different example, at least in the beginning of his life, because he's not one in the beginning of his life that made a lot of mistakes. And so if you're in 1 Kings chapter 3, let's just start reading down through. We're going to read down through and you'll get some of the background here just to remember who he is. 1 Kings 3, starting in verse 3, it says, Solomon loved the Lord, walking in the statutes of David his father, only he sacrificed and made offerings at the high places. And the king went to Gibeon to sacrifice there, for that was the great high place. Solomon used to offer 1,000 burnt offerings on the altar. At Gibeon, the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream by night. And God said, ask what I shall give you. God comes to him. Solomon is David's son. He's the next king. And he comes to Solomon at night, and he basically gives Solomon a blank check. You know, all the movies, Aladdin, all the genie movies, and, you know, what are my three wishes? I mean, I'm not using that as a nickname. But God says to Solomon, oh, what do you want? It's a test. God is in the business of testing. He tests us, not for him. He knows what we're going to do. He tests us for us. And so we see here. And so God asks him that question. Verse 6. And Solomon said, you have shown great and steadfast love to your servant David, my father, because he walked before you in faithfulness, in righteousness, and an uprightness of heart towards you. And you have kept for him this great and steadfast love and have given him a son to sit on his throne this day. And now, O Lord my God, you have made your servant king in place of David my father. Look what he says next. Although I am but a little child. There's his weakness. He's honest with God and he recognizes. And David was the successful king. He honored the Lord. They defeated their enemies. Their borders were further than ever before. They were victorious. And Solomon watches his dad, who is a warrior, who is doing what he is doing. And his father died, and he now becomes king. And he looks at himself and says, there is no way I can leave this. And he says that. He says, although I am but a little child. Next line. I do not know how to go out or come in. See, he's honest with God. He's recognizing that, you know what? I'm not up to the task. Verse 8, and your servant is in the midst of your people whom you have chosen, a great people, too many to be numbered or counted for a multitude. Give your servant, therefore, here's what he asked for, an understanding mind to govern your people, that I may discern between good and evil. For who is able to govern this great people? And so God tests Solomon, who is the king, with this question. And what does Solomon ask for? He asks for wisdom. He asks for help. He's like, God, I can't do this. I don't want to mess this up. This is your thing. Like, I recognize that. And I need your help. I feel like I am a little kid. And who wants to follow a successful leader? Nobody. It's very intimidating. Look what God says to him, verse 10. It pleased the Lord that Solomon had asked this. God was pleased. Test. I mean, well, what would you do if God came to you in the middle of the night and said, I'm going to say a name, but I don't want to say what your name is. Whatever, I'll do whatever you want me to do. What would you say? Whatever you would say reveals a lot about you. And that's what happens. Solomon asked for wisdom. So look what God does, verse 11. And God said to him, because you have asked this and have not asked for yourself long life or riches or the life of your enemies, but have asked for yourself understanding to discern what is right, behold, I now do according to your word. Behold, I give you a wise and a discerning mind, so that none like you has been before you, and none like you shall arise after you. I give you also what you have not asked for, both riches and honor, so that no other king shall compare with you all your days. And if you will walk in my ways, keeping my statutes and my commandments, as your father David walked, then I will lengthen your days. So what does God do? This is, we get a picture of who God is. God is a generous God. He doesn't just give him wisdom. He lavishes everything else on him. He says, since you asked wisely, I'm going to give you wealth. I'm going to give you influence. I'm going to give you all those things. God is testing. God is testing. Turn over to chapter 4. And this could easily be several sermons. So the challenge here is to kind of get enough picture to see, get enough picture. So looking over in chapter 4, verse 29, and again, time passes. We don't know all the time factors here. But we're given another description of Solomon now later, after this dream, and God giving him wisdom. Verse 29. And God gave Solomon wisdom and understanding beyond measure and breadth of mind. Like what? What does he say? What picture does he give him? Like the sand of the seashore. How many of you have been to the seashore? Any of you ever, when you're on the beach, say, you know, I'm going to start counting sand. Parents, if your kids are bored, start counting sand. So he's giving a picture here. And the picture is the quantity of sand on the seashore is the breadth of mind that God gave to Solomon. He gave him an ability to think like none other. Verse 30, so that Solomon's wisdom surpassed the wisdom of all the people of the east. And all the wisdom of Egypt. So again, the sand, now he's going to the other nations. And he's saying, if you take Solomon and you compare him to the other nations, to the other counselors, to the other satraps, to the other, whatever names that each government gives for their smart people, Solomon was above them all. Solomon was above them all. Verse 31, he grounds it. Look what he says. For he was wiser than the other men, wiser than even the Ezraites. Who is that? Anybody know? God's trying to tell us something. And Heman. Anybody know Heman? I don't know. How about Calcol? These are great names to name your children. How about Darda, the sons of Mahol, and his fame was in all the surrounding nations. Let's put it into our perspective. What are those names? We don't know those names. But basically, in their day, those were the Nobel Peace Prize winners in Solomon's day. And what God is saying, you have these Nobel Prize winners, Solomon was smarter than them. He was smarter than them. Verse 32. He also spoke 3,000 proverbs, and his songs were 1,005. So one of the things that we know, he spoke these things, but he was in print. And 1,000 BC, when paper was not very accessible, being in print meant you were a top dog. He was in print. In fact, his proverbs are still influencing us today. Verse 33. He spoke of trees from the cedar that is in Lebanon, the hyssop that grows out of the wall. He spoke also of beasts and of birds and of reptiles and fish. Translation. He was into biology and zoology. So this wasn't just some guy that was brilliant up here. His brilliance was on the ground. And if that wasn't enough, way before the internet, you have the people net. Verse 34, and people of all nations came to hear the wisdom of Solomon, and from all the kings of the earth who had heard of his people are coming from all over the world. God gave these abilities to Solomon, and Solomon. He knew what God had done. He knew that he was just another ordinary person. But God gave him special and unbelievable abilities. And in fact, he gave him abilities that no one has ever had before and no one has ever had apart from Jesus Christ. Which, since he was divine, he had a few advantages. That's what he says. No one been like him. God gave them skills and gifts and abilities. God gave them by him, but God gave them for God. God gave them to Solomon so that Solomon would use them for the glory of God. Glory of God. And so this, you know, we read through these things, and a lot of times we read through the Bible, we don't get the timeline. And this is taking years. This isn't just, you know, he woke up from the dream and all of a sudden he's the smartest person in the world. Now, there's a process in this. He's walking, I mean, God gave him the wisdom part, but also all these other pieces. You know, and again, read Ecclesiastes, you know, talks about his zoology and just the gardens that he built. Like he, and so what was God doing? The kingdom was expanded, and now God was using Solomon, who was a king of peace, to show and to touch down the wisdom of God for the whole world. The whole world.
So you're saying, wow, sounds like you guys are all together. Not a whole lot of struggles. Where's the brokenness coming from? I think most of us probably, what we know most about Solomon is the last 20 years of his life. Turn over to chapter 1 Kings 11. So here, the wisest man who has ever lived on the face of the earth. Look what it says. 11, chapter 11, verse 1. Now King Solomon loved many foreign women, along with the daughter of Pharaoh, Moabite, Ammonite, Edomite, Sidonian, and Hittite women, from the nations concerning which the Lord had said to the people of Israel, you shall not enter into marriage with them, neither shall they with you, for surely they will turn away your heart after their gods. Solomon clung to these in love. He had 700 wives who were princesses and 300 concubines, and his wives turned away his heart. For when Solomon was old, his wives were sore. Turned away his heart after other gods. And his heart was not wholly true to the Lord his God. The heart of David his father. And so what does he do? Isn't he the wisest man? How could he mess up so colossally? I don't know if that's a word. How could he mess up so big? If you're the wisest person in the world, why would you do that?
Wilson. At some point, he got up today and said, you know what? You get whatever I want. I know God said some of those things. I'm wise. I don't know how it works, but that's how, at some point, he stopped applying the wisdom that he had. And the moment we stopped, and the moment we stop doing the wisdom that God has given us, is the day we'll start making foolish. So turn back a few books to the book of Ecclesiastes. Ecclesiastes, chapter 12. Right after Psalms, Proverbs. Ecclesiastes chapter, the last two verses of the whole book. Basically, if you want to know how all this played out, Ecclesiastes is his end of life story. And here's what he says. He was at the highest and at the lowest point. And here's how he sums it all up. And this is what he says to us. Chapter 12, verse 13. The end of the matter, all has been heard. Fear God and keep his commandments. For this is the whole duty of fear God and obey his commandments. They go together. You can't say, I fear God, but you don't obey his commands. Because to fear God means you obey his commands. Fear means to revere, means to listen. And so when you listen to God, it means you do what he says. But I don't feel like it. It doesn't matter. Fear God. Now, we have this conversation about fear, you know. We should be really, 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 really afraid of God. Think coming up front here and sit talking, that creates fear. We should really be afraid of God because he's greater, more powerful. We should. Now, we don't have to have that because he's loving. Like, he's not going to hurt us. He can squish us easily, but he doesn't do that. And so, fearing God means that you listen to him. That means what he says goes. You obey him. You want to put it this way? Fearing God is the invisible part. Obeying God is the visible part. You can't see if you revere God or not. I mean, you can't. You're not going to have a party. But you know what? You can surely see if you're obeying God. It's in black. In black. And so Solomon is saying at the end of his life, fear God. Not some of his commands, all of his commands. All of them. And so that's the whole point of what he's saying here. And so Solomon, being the wisest person, at some point his confidence shifted from God himself to the gifts and the skills and the abilities that God. And when that started to happen, he stopped exercising the wisdom that God gave him. And you know what? Let's not be too hard on Solomon. We can sit here and say, what were you thinking? What was your life was written in a book here and we could talk about it? His comfort. And some of you made some decisions and you're like, how in the world did I ever do that? I'm sure Solomon had many days where he thought, how could I ever do that? I was the wisest one in the world. And so it gives you comfort. It gives us comfort. Yeah, you're going to make some, even today, This, you're going to make some foolish decisions. Just bang on it. I know you're not going to try to. Nobody tries to make foolish decisions. I mean, I guess there are certain people that do, but for the most part, as a follower of Jesus, you want to obey God. You want to follow him. Just be honest. You're not going to do it all the time. And guess what? Solomon's life shows us that God uses that. See, God was growing Solomon in more wisdom because of his foolishness.
And so he was seen. And so I think that's what it comes back to us. Even for you this morning, maybe you're sitting here like, no, I don't even want to talk about that bad decision that I made. I can't even bring it.
The guy had 700 wives. Like, anybody who's married once, has one wife? Why would you ever? What are you thinking? How would you juggle that? How? Yeah. Solomon made some wisest man made some pretty serious poor choices. So when you, whatever bad choices you have made, don't avoid them. Don't victimize them away. Make it like it's someone else's fault. Only you can make your own choices. Nobody makes you. Satan can't make you do one blessed thing. He can't. Only you can make your choices. So if you're here this morning and you make some poor choices, you're in company. Because you know what? If we're all to be honest, we've all done it. And you know what? In the next 12 months, we're all going to do it again. Because we're human. We're sheep. We can have the greatest intentions, but we're going to make poor choices. And so one of the things that Solomon teaches us here is it's never too late to start obeying God. It's never too late. It's never too late. God can take that and he can do unbelievable things. Don't avoid your foolishness. Don't act like you have it all together, because you know what? You got to deal with it. And Solomon does it. Did that in the beginning. I'm a child, God. I need your wisdom. He does it at the end. Lord, you know what? I played the fool. Should have listened. Would have went a lot better. I'm going to invite the worship team to come up. God, we thank you that you know us. God, we thank you for Solomon's life. We thank you for the example that he is. God, we thank you in this story. You didn't avoid these. You brought pain and heartache and discipline in Solomon's life because of the choices that he made. And so, God, I pray as we sing these next few songs, God, that you would help us to be like Solomon, the wisest man who was honest with you. And help us to be honest with you. Help us to be honest with other people around us. And we ask all of these things. In your name, we pray. Amen.